Hey, this is Peter Dean from Render Tribe. You're listening to the Sassholes.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. Hello. Hello.
Welcome to Sassholes, the podcast, where me, Jamie Kearney, and Pete Jamsons. Pete, say hi.
How you doing? How you doing?
Talk about our 6 years of experience in the software as a solution business. AKA Sassholes. We also have a guest Sasshole who might become more of a permanent guest Sasshole, and Jason Ferrara. He joined us like three podcasts ago. Jason, you want to say hi?
Hello. Hey, everybody.
And today we have also a guest joining us for our topic. Peter Dean, he's the founder of an agency called Render Tribe. He's going to talk about go-to-market strategy, buyer persona, the buyer journey, and things of that nature. Peter's on right now, so he's going to have to bear through the joke of the day and all this other stuff that we do before we get into the meat of the podcast. But Peter, if you want to say hi, say hi. I know we're going to give you an intro later on.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, Pete. So Peter, and before anyone listens to this, please subscribe to us today. Smash the like button. Do whatever you can. Give us 5 stars. And all of that, because unfortunately, you're going to have to listen to this really bad joke of the day that Pete Jansons puts on, not Peter Dean.
You undersell this segment, Karnak. Carney.
Yeah.
You hear about the two guys in Portland that stole a calendar?
No. What happened?
They got 6 months each.
That's so bad, dude.
We'll edit that out in post.
All right. Shout outs. We got some shout outs. You want to start? You stole one of mine. So,
who did I steal? You can take it.
Dustin Mazanowski. I was going to give him a shout out for 1 year at Upwork.
How do we know him?
Well, he worked at Personified, then became, what was it, CB? What was that? What did they then call themselves?
Is that like Redfish, Rightfish?
I forgot.
No, he was Goldfish? After Rightfish. He was there when it was Personified.
Okay.
And then it was like CB Sourcing Solutions. I think that was.
Yeah.
He went over to Upwork, but I also know him because his kids go to my.
This Dead Air has been sponsored by Jamie Kearney's AT&T Wi-Fi. We'll edit that out in post. All right, we got
you got another one.
Yeah, Grace Kingston, Partnership Director, Namefluer Data Solutions. All I know is I saw her on LinkedIn. She had a whole bunch of Lucite from 2020. So congrats, Kingston. Not bad for a kid that came off the streets in sales and worked her way up. Way to go. That's all I got, Carney.
I got one more, Kevin Thompson. So it's his 1 year work anniversary. That? 1 year work anniversary at Flexera, so congrats to that. I met him at kickoff last year. It was the first time I met him, and then we've been virtual ever since. But he did come from Silk Road and knew, worked a lot with Ben Jablo, who I know.
The blow.
You know. But I knew I know very well and stuff like that. So, Kevin, congrats on your 1 year work anniversary at Flexera.
Way to not get fired.
Wait, come on. We don't. Well, that's not how we operate, right?
We'll let it go.
All right. Before we get into the news, I think we got to.
This Dead Air has been sponsored by Jamie Kearney's.
Give a shout out to our Spot Noodle today. If you are experiencing ADHD, any type of mental health issues,
bad Wi-Fi.
Your kids experiencing that. Bad Wi-Fi like I am probably during. Reach out to neuronoodle.com, say and you get 50% off. All right, now onto the news.
It's good that Neuronoodle and laughter, it's in the same
right,
plug
exactly.
There. It's good.
Did that break up completely?
The brand.
Not really. That brand. Was pretty good. That was pretty good, Cardi.
AT&T stinks.
So News. I'm debating, why should we have news on here? I've been doing so good not having news on for the last 2 months. I've been in such a good mood. Here's the news. Another 900,000 unemployed, Barney.
Yeah, we said it was going to get worse.
It keeps adding up. And we got new president. He's my president. I didn't vote for him, but he's my president. Bernie, how did he get all those memes going on? Was he really sitting there with those mittens on?
Yeah. Did you see the virtual ghost reenactment with him and Demi Moore, and he's playing Patrick Swayze with the mittens?
No, I gotta check that out. Find that.
That's pretty funny.
But help me out. I didn't watch it. He was just, that looked like he was sitting in like a picnic chair.
He was. I mean, the picture is exactly how he was sitting.
Okay.
It was really funny before even all the memes happened. They showed him on camera, and even my kids who were watching it, they looked at me and said, who is that? Like, wondering who this, person who's basically hugging themselves. And then we had a really hearty laugh, and then it was everywhere.
Yeah, it is everywhere. There's also a site. There's some site where you can put in an address, and it will Photoshop the meme into that address for you.
Oh, all right.
So unverified, but my son told me today that Bernie or someone in his organization are making like T-shirts and sweatshirts and selling them for charity with that on there. So I think he's trying to turn it into. He recognizes it and turning it into something.
As long as they tax 60% of it. All right.
Hey,
so more, that's the news.
Bit of news.
Oh, go ahead.
Can we do one more bit of news?
Yeah.
Hank Aaron. Oh, Hammer and Hank.
Oh. Hammer and Hank.
And we want to talk about Hammer and Hank because he was awesome. And we want to turn people on to the book One for the Record by George Plimpton, which is an outstanding book about Hank Aaron's life and his chase of the home run record. I've never read a better book on dedication for one specific thing, and his focus was unbelievable.
Would you say that he's still the home run record holder, even though he has been surpassed by the steroid era?
Oh man, we could do a whole podcast on that.
Yeah.
I know. What was Plimpton's first book?
Paper Lion, maybe?
Yeah. He's on Detroit.
That was a good one too. Yeah. Yeah. He got beat up hard. in that book, but also good. But I thought One for the Record was my favorite of his.
All right, so now we're gonna get into the main topic of why Peter joined us today. So, Jason, you brought Peter on, so why don't you introduce Peter onto the Sasshole podcast?
Yeah, thanks, Jamie. Peter Dean, thrilled to have you on the Sasshole podcast. I will let you introduce yourself. More than I will, but I'll just say that you and I worked together for over 6 years. I learned a ton from you based on go-to-market strategy, demand generation, management, leadership. So I thank you for coming on and sharing your wisdom with us. Why don't you go ahead and just introduce yourself and talk just briefly about Render Tribe, who they are, and then we'll move on.
First of all, I have to say I'm pretty humble because Jason just said management and leadership to me. So this is a guy who, like, I remember early days Outmatch when these guys were kind of building this brand. And then I would go to QBRs and then I would go to the kickoff every year and I would show up at the kickoff. And I remember it was like three years ago. And I was just amazed at what an amazing brand and company they built. And for someone to say management and leadership, that's something I look up to Jason for, to be honest with you. So, but just to tell you a little bit about
Peter, you're on the show already. You didn't have to.
Yeah. But I'm just telling you, like,
you didn't have to sell.
I don't know about me and management. Like, I know other stuff, but I'm like probably the worst manager going. And I'm self aware of that. So, we're a company that works with SaaS software companies kind of early stage. So our customer is our ICP, because we're going to talk about it, is a customer that's funded A round funded, A or B round funded, that has product to market fit, and they are ready to grow. They now that you have a VC in place, you have huge growth numbers in front of you, and we show up and try to help with that. So it's kind of
your main client that you work with is VC funded early rounds.
Yeah, so we have growth. We have two. So that one is easy for us to identify and kind of find and chase. The other one that's hard to identify is private equity funded. Like they're revamping their go-to-market strategy. So they kind of got to a spot and they have to kind of change or upgrade or, you know, to be honest with you, there's usually some problem there that we have to go and try to help fix. So that's the other one. Those are hard to find, you know, harder. We usually get those from referrals from private equity firms that we've known over the years. They'll say, hey, maybe you should have these guys come in and help you. So, and like, if my mother asks me what I do, I'll tell her I'm a marketing agency, but it's a little more than that now. Cause we do like full tech stack support, like Salesforce implementation, kind of all the tech stack and the data that supports kind of the pipeline. So we're trying to measure everything through to kind of understand and kind of get their pipeline in order so that, you know, they can be successful really.
What's a tech stack, Carney?
Are you asking me what a tech stack? I mean, tech stack is basically prioritization and different areas within the overall solution that you might have different groups associated with different portions of that overall technology. You call your tech stack, and then you might have different prioritizations within each of those.
Yeah,
but they're all layered within one.
Yeah, and the priorities are different at different stages, right? So you add stuff as you need it, and you know, budget you don't necessarily have at certain times.
Yeah, I could get into the whole product side, but it's usually like overarching stories and stuff like that help drive all the development stories, help drive the chapters or whatever we call them now. And that sort of aligns the stack together.
Hey, Pete, and just jump in quickly on a text that comment. I did an audit earlier last year of the marketing tech stack, the pieces of technology that marketing used at Outmatch to run the business. And we had over 60 different pieces of technology that we were paying for that, you know, had maybe a foundation with like Salesforce, but then you layer on a bunch of other pieces of technology that you want data to flow through so you can track it and tell stories about it and that sort of thing. So, you know, I thought that was a tall stack. And Peter and I, in fact, talked about that. Like, why do we have so many pieces of technology? It can get out of control pretty quickly. Doing an audit of that is really eye-opening.
There's actually companies out there that do that type of work for you. One's called Flexera. Yeah.
Really?
And they save companies millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah, so, and it can get out of control for sure really fast.
It does. They put dust on technology. So usually when people are buying technology, they buy technology for the sole purpose of what they're buying it for, not knowing that that technology might have other purposes that could fulfill your need. And then when you go for the other need, you go and buy technology, even though the technology you already bought a year ago could fulfill on that. And you have no idea. And what Flexera does, it comes in with their software and allows you to put dust on all of your software, as well as identify overlap. And be able to cut money out.
Especially if you have a decentralized system on purchasing, right, Carney?
Yeah.
And no controls. Checking.
Yeah.
So actually, you got two sponsors.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Peter.
Yeah, no, it's really dangerous. It's interesting because, you know, we get called in. There's a conversation we had recently with a CEO that said, hey, I kind of like that. Like, they're getting pitched, right? And so like, oh, I like this technology. What do you think? I'm like, we need a plan first, and then we build technology we bring technology in that supports what that plan is, right? That's the pitfall. And something actually Jason and I had conversations about a lot early days is like marketing automation. Everyone's like, I need it. Like, it was the hot thing. Everyone needed it, but they really didn't know what it did. And a lot of people didn't really ever use it. And so we did a lot of work, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, just going in and making it functional after they had it for 2 years, you know?
Do you guys do a lot of work?
Go ahead, Jamie.
Do you guys do a lot of work on automating prospects and trying to figure out which prospects are the best fit for the companies you're working for and ranking them in terms of that? Some people call it like a CapDB process and stuff like that.
That's a hard thing to do. We do some of that in the beginning when we talk about ideal customer profile. It's like a fundamental important part of that is to try to figure out who really is a good customer. I don't want to segue into that, but.
I think we should, because Jamie's point's a great one, and it is squarely in what we're here to talk about. So, you know, Peter, you had said just in terms of marketing automation, like what's the plan, then put the technology on that. I think what's important when we talk about go-to-market strategy is what's the plan, and then build the pieces of your strategy, right? So people oftentimes come in, well, we need this content, or we need these assets, or I need this BDR team. It's like, well, wait, what's the plan?
Yeah.
And then let's, you know, service the plan based on that. So the plan, I mean, you could talk about how to start the plan. I was thinking we start the conversation with sort of ideal customer profile. And then I think we get to Jamie's question very quickly, but is that the start of the planning process?
Yeah.
What is an ideal customer profile? How do you build it?
Yeah, so this is a really hard thing for companies to think about. And it's surprisingly hard. And one of the things that we do before we look at ICP is, and this is something early companies have to do, and even if you show up and you're just a new VP of marketing, director, whatever, if you're new to this, or even VP of sales, you should find out in a marketplace, how much explicit demand is there for your product, right?
So what does that mean?
So if you go back, and I don't want to cloud it, but if you think about SEO and paid, right, as tactics, keyword driven, right? So there's keywords that people use every day. They use Google to think, right? So they're typing stuff in about what they're trying to learn about, and they're trying to get articles or they're trying to find companies. But the distinction of those two things that I'll kind of talk about is that they do it based on where they are in this discovery path, which is a customer journey, right? Or the traditional way that, you know, like Accenture used to call it, like the purchase process, and that there's like a model for that, right? But it's only a purchase process. They buy something. They may be just trying to solve their problem. They don't care about buying something. They care about solving a problem. So they go through this process where there's an initiative that's created where, hey, I think we have a problem here. It's important. We should look at it. You know, Jason, you and I have been through this together so many times. And then we're like, well, is how big, I can hear in my voice, you saying, well, how much of a problem is this really? What is the scale? We have to go and look at that. So we do research, right? That's the next stage. And then we're kind of finding out, it's not that big a deal. I don't think it's important compared to other things going on. And then, you know, the business goes through this process with people, right? And then maybe we get another person involved because they do it every day. And then we kind of start refining that search, that process down to solve the problem. And then we may say, well, we actually have to buy something. And then we're at the purchase stage of that process. And, you know, it's in sales and everything we do, they're going through this process as people, which is really the buying journey, a group of people to kind of solve a problem. But, that's I'm getting off track, but, you know,
that's the process that's the process that companies go through, right, to do the research. So how do you, to uncover that on the business side, to know who your ideal customer is, who those people are, who are looking for those to solve those problems. How do you do that at scale?
Yeah. So back to this demand thing first, right? So we're looking at this, and then we try to bucket those keywords into those stages and say, if someone's saying this, we kind of think they're kind of here. And then the reason we do that is because we want to see what they're saying, because they don't know or speak our language, right? They may not know what ICP is. So they're like, I don't know what that is, but they still have that problem and they don't know how to manifest it. So search can tell us a lot about what's going on in a marketplace, not just to say, hey, should we do SEO or paid. It's just to say, what language is our customer using, and where and how?
Yeah, so you're analyzing people's, you're analyzing people's search intent, their questions, the things they're putting into search engines. Yeah. You're analyzing that at scale and saying, hey, is the problem that you've told me you're trying to solve a big enough problem to solve?
Well, and where is it, right? So we could have a lot of people in that research refinement stage talking about all this stuff, and there's a lot of volume of activity there, and there's actually no one saying what we actually do, right? Yeah. So like in the early days of Check, there's like no one was doing any research on automated reference checking. They didn't know to, right? But there was a lot of activity around reference checking that was what we're saying is pent up demand. It manifested itself in that early stage. So that's really the first thing we do, because
okay, so confirm the problem.
Yeah, so that helps kind of give context to all the next things that you do, and that's I think an important thing to do. But
and then
the big thing is right?
Yeah, so if I'm selling, I need to know who I'm selling to, and that's what the ICP is, right? So how do I build that?
Yeah, so ICP is tough because it's not like hearing words from your voice in my head, like I could tap, you know, if it was just marketing, right? If Jason and I showed up and they're like, hey, you guys do marketing for us, or software company is what we do. And they're like, well, you guys should come up with what the ICP is. And I'm like, we could say whatever we want. It doesn't mean it's going to be true, right? I can come up with what we think the ICP should be, but what is it actually? And that really relates to where the company is and what they're doing. So you could, like early software companies get sent in tangents, right? Maybe we build this for a certain industry and that's where we started. But then another company bought and they take us in another direction. And then we have decisions to make what we do with product, right? Do we go and support this enterprise company that's doing all this crazy stuff that we're not used to doing because they're paying us maybe more money than our regular customer? And does that make sense? It's a business strategic decision who we sell to. And so if the CEO and, you know, VP of product, everyone says we are going to do this, that's our ICP, like this is our ICP, it's like core what we believe in, then that is really your ICP. And you can get, you know, I get like the shiny things run across my desk, like people show up and like, hey, we're like a big company and we want to do ABM. Like, we'll pay you double what you normally get paid. And you're like, yeah, I want to do that. Like, but that's not what I do. That's not how we're built. That's not how our company functions.
And so I think what you're saying here is once you identify an ideal customer profile, then you need to execute against that profile, right?
Yeah.
And be able to sort of validate the learning that you're seeing in marketing and the sales.
Yeah. And I think it's a business decision that needs to be brought up beyond marketing and sales to be it, like the really good ones are the ones that the company believes that this is our mission. And I'll give you an example of it. I heard Dharmesh talk about HubSpot early days, and they talked about, he said they were for like kind of mid-market SMB. I mean, SMB is so grandly like, fine, but
wide.
They had a lot of enterprise, real true enterprise software companies saying, hey, we're going to use you. And they used them. And he said they made a decision and they told them, we are not going to change our product for you. We are not going to adjust anything for you. We're built for this. If you want to use it, so be it. But don't call us and say you want X, Y, and Z, because that is not who we serve. And to me, that was like a great definition of a company that really dialed their ICP in. Even though back then we probably didn't even call it that, but they were doing it and they were successful because of that. So I think I think
that's one of the hardest things, right? Because as a new company, you know, somebody comes in, a whale comes in and says, I'm going to spend five times more than what you normally do. And that rep is incentive, that rep and the sales guy and everyone's incentivized to get that deal in.
Yeah.
Just either walk away from the deal and everyone gets mad.
Yeah.
Probably the rep will quit, you know, or then you say to the client, hey, here's the out of the box and you have no say in the product roadmap, even though you bought us. You're paying. I think that's just such a. It's the right way to do it, but how many people do it that way. I doubt.
Yeah, it's hard to stick with it, right?
Yeah, it is. And
it is when they start complaining.
You know,
because you got to think also, somebody bought a company, maybe during this time you changed ownership, somebody bought that company and they're expecting you to grow off of what you already had, which you had $1 million in there from one company.
Yeah.
You know, now you're sort of stuck.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen that too. You know,
I think the worst thing that could happen is you have a company that's driven by sales, being a software company versus a software company being led by product.
I don't necessarily think, I think if the sales organization is focused on what they want to accomplish and believes that, and, you know, and they're informed on like, this is what we really could solve, they're going to sell more product, right? That the idea of ICP is, how do we find the customer that, number one, is going to churn less, right? Increase our MRR, ARR, or, you know, or financially, like, and this is the hard thing to do because people always say, we use account-based marketing to increase our MRR. Well, maybe it's like right-size your MRR, right? Maybe it's like get the ones that we can crush those. It's low, like, it's low, you know, friction on our process. We have low churn and there's enough of them, right? What is the total addressable market for that group, that segment we're talking about? And like, if we can live there till we're 20 million, then great. Then we get to 20 million top line. And then we say, okay, maybe we expand. I mean, you know, it's kind of what Outmatch did. They focused on a very specific group and crushed it. And then you kind of start moving because you have to generate more revenue and change what you're doing.
You know, Pete, I think you bring up a really interesting point about collaboration. So is the sales team driving the business? Is the product team driving the business? And the reality is, and Peter, jump in, you know, on this topic, or Jamie or Pete, but you can't create an ICP in a vacuum. So like, yeah, there's no way that we could sit here and the four of us come up with some company's ICP and then tell people we have it and then it's successful. You know, the sales team, the absolute frontline sales reps talking to clients every day or prospects every day, they need to be involved too, because they have to believe it and say whatever we decide, but they have more knowledge than we may, just, you know, analyzing internet traffic, for example. Yeah. So it's a collaborative thing. And I mean, I think Pete, you're right, and product has to have a say there, but man, it's, you know, it's one team. It's one team, right? And that team's got to.
You have them saying what they want, but their actions are showing something else, is kind of my point.
Yeah. And I've been at companies selling, and they said what we were supposed to sell, but I had to actually close business. So I was selling what we actually could sell, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, they don't believe you. This is what they believe. I can close on that and hit my number, right? And that's how I got paid. So like, I'm gonna go sell that. And like, you can sell that in the press media, whatever. It just, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, the
like,
conference room does not equal the front lines.
Yeah,
that's right.
Exactly. Sounds great in the conference room, but it doesn't
equal that. So like, how do you do it, right?
Well, so yeah.
You know, like, one of the things that we do with ICP is like, again, to Jason's point, you got to temper everything, but you take a look at customer data, you pull customer data down. You can also subjectively interview people and say, like, what if you were to clone a customer, which one would it be? Like, tell me your best ones ever that are like you love, and then start trying to figure out what is it about them. In data too, we kind of look at those and separate them as like a cohort and say, okay, what does that look like? You know, and well, they're a little different, right? And so I'll just tell you a little story about our ICP. So we thought our ICP, I gave you part of it in the beginning, was like funded. We started putting up, I don't know what the number is right now of the amount of funding they get, because we learned like too little funding, too starved, can't move fast enough, can't really get the job done that they're, you know, asked to do. But series A, B, or C funded X amount, less than three marketing employees, less than 3 marketing employees in LinkedIn. When we figured that out, our conversion rate went way up and our success rate went way up. It's just where we fit. And that's something that is not apparent. If I told you what we do, you're like, oh man, you go on Crunchbase, you find everyone that gets funded and you call them. That's what we did. Now we just call the companies that have not a built out marketing team. And then that's a good fit for us. So.
Well, and the more you do that and the more you learn, then that message begins to get through to everybody in the company. Like, listen, here's my pipeline. Okay. Yeah. All my opportunities, and they're ranked in this way. Here's one that aligns with our ideal customer profile. Here's one that does not. Let's look at the velocity and the you know, conversion through the pipeline. And if you have enough data over time, my guess is you see, if you've done the ideal customer profile stuff, right?
Yeah.
The ICP opportunities have higher conversion and greater velocity than the other ones. And then that's how you get people to stop tinkering around with the ones that aren't going to close.
Yeah.
And renew better, right? The ICPs.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
You should renew better.
You got
to remember renewal.
I'll tell you, I won't share my, we have so much higher churn. And so I'm building a business based on recurring services revenue. It's not like, you know, software revenue, but it's services. I have such high churn and scope creep and problems with the ones that don't fit our ICP. Yeah. To the point where just like, you keep shooting yourself in the foot. You're like, why did we take that one? Why did we take that one? Because it's disruptive. Yeah. It like, you know, morale.
Have you ever fired a client?
Yeah, we have actually.
How did Jason take it?
Luckily, it wasn't me.
Fired so many times. Oh,
we've fired each other so many times; it's hard to count.
this is just a side thing, and I'm sure you guys can have a whole show about this. But Jason would get a text like Friday at like 4:00. I'm like, oh, geez. He's like, we gotta talk. I'm like, oh, you know. And then we would talk, and then by the end of the conversation, we're laughing because we're like. Because we have millennials that work for us, right? So they're interacting more than Jason and I interact. And like, he'd be like, they didn't talk to each other. I'm like, he said he talked to her or him. And then he'd be like, they said they did. But then I'm like, I asked them and they said it was text or it was like Slack or something like that. And it's like, they did not talk to each other. That was our problem.
I'm a stickler for if you say I talked to someone, you actually used your voice and not your thumbs.
And we would talk, right? Jason, whenever that happened, I was like, we're on the phone, right? And then I'm like, yeah, they didn't talk like 3 weeks ago, and then they didn't talk 2 weeks ago, and then finally by this week. It got bad because it was so asynchronous and garbage.
Yeah, right.
Anyhow, I'll get off my thing.
But. Okay, so the other thing I want to touch on too, because we could do a whole show on each one of these things, but the other thing I think is, I think it's worthwhile touching on persona quickly, Peter, but honestly, the better thing I think to do is talk about the buyer journey, because it relates more to what the listeners of this podcast, I think, are trying to figure out, which is when I'm talking to someone, how do I know what I should be saying to them? And that's part of the buyer journey. So I think we should probably dig in there a little bit.
Yeah. So just one other thing on ICP, like you kind of go through this process and bring everyone in and you kind of start defining it. But our rule is you have to document it because it forces you to say exactly what it is. Because when we get in these ICP conversations, they're like, oh, yeah, and it gets all like heady and everyone's all in these places. But then once you document it and you send it out, they're like, well, I said, I think, you know, and this is a conversation we had, like it's over 500 employees for this one. But it's 1,000 for this one. And then you get those kind of things sorted out because it could be like, because your ICP really is who is the best customer. And one of the pitfalls is don't just think in demographics because I'm going to have to go back in and pull the customer total addressable market for it and then come up with it. So again, our And then ICP as a concept too gets really structured thinking, right? Like you're like, I have to document this. I think you should, but you can have two. You can have two. Mm-hmm. And you should also start thinking about what are the segments within that, which is a good lead into customer journey, because the journeys may be different, you know, for different segments.
Right.
Well,
right.
Yeah, I think a lot of these.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead. I think sales. I think a lot of these sales reps and these younger leaders probably have no idea what the buyer journey is and what that really means. Besides, for them, it's do I email and how do I stress? How do I get them to get a contract to me? Right. I mean, that's probably their interpretation of the buyer journey.
Their journey is to turn on Salesforce. Their journey and call.
Yeah, it's their journey. Right.
Here's your journey.
It's not the buyer journey. They're like, yeah, why won't this person respond to me? You know.
I'm fortunate to be over 50 in that when I started selling in the beginning, I was part of the entire journey, right? Like we literally would talk to companies early and it took a while. And then you have to keep going back and learning and figure out where they are. And we're always calibrating to what the next step was. And I was taught like customer centered selling and, you know, like strategic selling and all these things at like the companies I worked for. And it's so much more complex now because a lot of that research and activity, they had to get the information from me or a trade show or go talk to someone and have them hand you a PDF. Like, well, it wasn't a PDF. It was like a printout. That's why I had like a bigger suitcase than I did now. Like you have to bring these things and be like, oh, here's the Fujitsu study. And, you know, we'd hand them out. And, but they couldn't get them without talking to me. But now we can just download stuff and they can do it a lot. They can do all that work without talking to you. And that's where sales and marketing are one in one piece, because at some point we call it like the fulcrum of communication when they actually talk to you, like they could be way down in that. If you have a software that a technology that is like low cost, you know, understood, you know, there's other things that go into why that they don't even ever have to talk to you, right? So if you buy like QuickBooks, like you don't have to talk to anyone about that. It's just like, oh, does this fit? Oh yeah, there's one for me. Great, bye, I'm done. You have enterprise and it's like new disruptive technology, a lot of change management, all this stuff. They talk to us earlier because there's a lot that goes into it and there's deeper understanding, but that process is like fragmented. And I was lucky enough to sell when they had to talk to me. So it is for thinking that, you know,
so thinking the Peter, buyer journey. If all that research gets done online now,
yeah,
and I'm a sales rep for any size ICP, right? Yeah. I'm on the phone. I got to fly, you know, whatever. I'm supposed to fly out to Boise or whatever the case is. What's my job? I mean, I know my job, I get paid when I close business, but if all this research is online, then what am I supposed to be doing?
So I think the job is to really figure out where they are in that journey. Like, where are they in that process? And it's harder. Cause like, I would know, like you would know, cause they're going to tell you right out the get. Like my biggest close ever, it took 2 years and they told me we are not leaving FedEx. I worked for DHL at the time. And I'm like, I'm not here for that. I just want to find out what you guys think we should do in semiconductor and supply chain and whatever. So, you know, like it's tough for reps today because they'll come in, they'll buzz you, right? They'll like buzz the tower and be like, I need a demo. And you're like, well, wait, okay. And they kind of give you half information and it could be just a demo that's super early. Or it could be like, I am going to decide and you're one of two companies. They don't tell you that. Like, that's brutal. Right? Like, we try to use evidence and content and activity and web stuff to try to guess where they are. But I think their job's to figure out, well, where are you? Okay, what can I do to help? Why, like, they're talking to you for a reason. I don't think in my entire sales career / marketing career, there's ever been a time a customer talked to you for no reason at all. They may act like it, yeah. But, you know.
Yeah.
they've got to, wouldn't you say, like, when you're thinking about the buyer journey,
yes,
not only why are you talking to them, are they, you know, one, if you're going to talk to them, they got to be in an ICP, or they should be.
Yeah. Right? They should I think it's the only caveat to that is a really early, like, depending on a really, you know, the audience is like, you kind of have to figure out where you fit, right? If you're still kind of in figure out where you fit time frame, you can test some waters, but I think you, like our approaches today, the most efficient approaches today are, here's a list of companies we're going after, A. Here's a list of companies that fit the profile, B. That we're not going after right now. Let's focus on the ones we're going after today. And then if someone comes in and they fit the profile, let's go. We're game on. If they don't, we got to kind of figure that out.
But there, another big caveat I always say is, and this is where people say luck comes into play, but you need to not only know who you're going to talk to. You might have a great product that's competitive, but you need to know if you're selling them a software, when are they up for a renewal? Like with their current provider?
Yeah.
That's like the biggest key, because even if they're up, and for all those listeners out there right now that are listening, if somebody's not up for a renewal in 2 years, it doesn't mean call them back in 18 months.
All right.
It just means start circling the wagons now. You know, 2 years is when, you know, probably 16 months from now is when you start really honing in on trying to leverage that relationship you've built over time. But finding out when is a huge key.
And I think your investment is calibrated to the, like, it relates to the cost of the solution you provide. So the deal I closed was like, it wasn't just me, because it was a team, right? So the deal I was part of closing took us 2 years, but it's, you know, bigger than some software companies' revenue, right? It's like, it was huge. And it was worth the 2 years to put the time in, just because we influenced what the RFP was when it came out. And then we won because we were part of the conversation the whole time about what the industry should be doing in the space, right, with them in an intimate way. And now, not every deal is like that, but we scale that down to different scales, and you should kind of think that way, right? Like, how do I influence, how do I help and aid education if I really believe in my core value proposition, and we built this thing to kind of solve this problem, we care about this problem. If they feel that, they're going to kind of take input, and then we can influence a deal. So, like, this is what we need. I agree. We all agree. Well, that's what we built our product based on. So we're the best solution. But again, that does have, like, that kind of influences journey, and journey is about, like, the journey. I love that we're calling it journey now, because it means, and customers presumptuous, right? Because their journey is about solving a problem. And what we really have to do, and this is something Jason actually is really good at, what are they thinking? Like, not what we think, but what are they thinking at these different stages? And what's the information they need to help them in that process, and go through that process at each stage? And who's involved? That's the persona piece. Like, who's important in this process? And who's important in this process? The funny thing is, they're not always in our sales force, because they may not talk to us, but we still have to think about them in that, because the education piece maybe is forwarded to them, or they're downloading something and they're like crickets. They're not talking to anyone. We're only talking to the director, but the CEO and the, you know, VP level person did some stuff, you know, that influenced the deal. Like, so.
Yeah. I mean, as much research that gets done by the prospect ahead of time before they talk to a sales rep, that has presented challenges for salespeople for years. Yeah. But I really think, you know, in today's world, it's interesting. We're just talking about tech stack. Given the right tech stack, that tech stack can level that playing field. So the sales rep can know, all right, here are all the things that you know. I know things about my prospect that they might know about us. And so then it becomes a real conversation. It's no longer that I've got to sell you on downloading the thing. You already downloaded the thing. Let's talk about that thing and figure out what, then I can tease out your problem and give and close you for another meeting where we talk about that problem or something, right? So there's a lot more information there that we can build out in this buyer journey. Pete, you look like you got a comment.
So, well, sales ops and marketing really need to be in cahoots. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because here's a journey.
Why do I feel like that's never the case?
It's not. Yeah, right.
And I'll match. Jason owned sales ops, which was the best thing we could ever have. That was super helpful.
You know? Well, he's definitely the half a percent that's out there.
Yeah. Not that you wanted to, though, right?
I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, I wanted to when it went well. I didn't want to when it went poorly. So, you know, I mean, like everything else.
Here's a journey. Okay, you got marketing in their budget, spending their money to soften the market, right? You have those leads coming in. They don't communicate to the sales reps whatever the offer was or the enticement or the influence was.
Yeah.
Then you have somebody calling in to the rep saying they want that offer, whatever the marketing was. Or you have marketing doing all that work in the drip campaign and the sales reps goes off script.
And they have no
reaching out with their own deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. And yeah. I think it's on two places, right? So to Jason's point, there's technology today. We can share all of that, right? You want to look at that. I don't think Salesforce is quite to the point where they have just a really sound, holistic look at relevant information. You kind of have to dig, right? There's some digging involved. Mm-hmm. And so my other point, again, you've heard me. I'm a sales guy. I've been there. I'm a marketing guy. I live there. It's also like a good rep is going to investigate and that they should be pulling it out too. Like going like, what are you guys saying? Like I worked in a FedEx, huge, like thousands of salespeople. Like if you were active and were knowing and you just dug in, you could sell a lot more. Like the more I dug into the other pieces and what we should be doing and learning, the more I sold, right? I could hit my number and make what I wanted to make. And so I think it is on like inquisitive to say, not like, hey, you owe me leads. Where are they? You know, it should be like, what are you saying? Like, and the door should be open the other way. What do you think? You think this bunk, why do you think that? Like, and we need to talk about it. So it needs to be open both ways. So.
Well, I think, you know, Peter, to me, the most important, you've said a lot of really great things, but the most important thing you said was you use the phrase fulcrum of communication. And I know the context in which you use that, but the important part is that without that, you've got to have that point between sales and marketing. You've got to have that point, sales, marketing, customer success, Jamie, like you pointed out. You got to have the product team involved in that, Pete, like you pointed out. Yeah. And sales ops, you know, who knows where that lives? I mean, I've worked in a business where sales ops was its own department in and of itself, and they got to be involved. And so if you don't have that communication, you're screwed, right? Because it doesn't matter what you think the ICP is. It matters what we think it is so that we can take our collective knowledge and validate the steps we're taking. I mean, it's a little bit off topic, but to me, summarizes things.
If you don't solve that, you are going to struggle with ICP and all that stuff. Whatever is documented is probably flimsy, right? You know, if you struggle with that.
Yeah.
That's why it's a company.
The one part that drives me nuts at companies is when you're seeing everything as separate departments.
Yeah.
And not seeing everything as a team. Because in my opinion, sales ops is there and stuff like that. The way I operate, I cut through everything and go right to the people I need to get something to go. But there's so many people that almost want this separation so that when things don't go well, they can point. They could be like, well, sales ops.
Blame and budgets. Yeah.
I see those customers for us. They want to put us in a box. And they want to isolate us and they want to say, oh, no, you're supposed to tell us what to do. I'm like, wait a minute. I am not part of your team. This is going to suck. I'm out of here, man. Like,
deals. But it happens a lot.
This little trick that I saw Jason do. Be in the exact same office as the VP of sales, senior salesperson. Those two.
We shared an office.
They sat in the same room. So they listen to stuff. You're probably more collaborative that way. They were in their own
room. Pete, could you imagine if you and I had to share an office? Could you possibly imagine if you and I shared an office?
How did I welcome you to the company when I first saw you?
Well, I can tell you that in our first interview, you told me that you didn't understand half the words I was using. So, you know,
but that goes away when you listen to conversations. That's why my wife knows what I do now, because you can hear through the door. I don't have to, what do you actually do? I'm like, I can't even explain it to you.
I can't explain it. Just listen to this podcast.
That's right. Well,
Peter, thanks. That's when we talk about ICP and persona and buyer journey all the way through that process, and that there's a method back there. It's not, you don't make it up. Everybody's not making it up on their own. There's a method there, and that communication is really important. So thanks for talking through that with us. I know that, I'm certain that there are people in the listening audience who will say, oh yeah, that's how it's supposed to work. I'm going to go talk to so-and-so about that. Somebody will pick up that.
Can I say one other thing on journey? And I know you're going to cut me off. So you got to document it. And then it's about what problems at what stages and what needs are. And it's like the content team's good at it, because they're kind of, what do we need to write? What stuff do we need? But you just got to document it. And I know Jason knows that. He would tell you too, because he's done it. And, it's just
document. If it's important, document it.
Just talk about it. Try to get it on paper, and that forces you that regimen of going, well, I don't know, is this right? And, because you're writing it down. So, and then do talk to your coworkers. Don't just.
Yeah.
Jamie, what do you think?
Talking
to people. I think this has been great. Thank you so much, Peter, for joining us. Jason, thanks for being an honorary, semi-regular guest sasshole.
Thanks.
Yeah, we'll look at the list
for response. You bring the sass.
You guys have t-shirts? I want a t-shirt so bad.
No, we should get one. That should be our logo. You bring the sass, we bring the ass. Anyways, with that, I think we can end Sasshole podcast for today. Pete, you're going to cue whatever we got crazy going on this time.
There's nothing crazy on this podcast. Silence.
Did you get a haircut or what? What's going on here? You got a
you
big
like that?
Buzz. Yeah. Did you do it yourself?
Yeah.
I mean, I got the exact opposite. Look at this thing.
Well, now I know what the difference between a 4 and a 1 is. I do have a big head. I have a big face, big head.
He got a Flobee.
I thought you went to a place and paid $60.
No, he got a Flobee for $60, and he Flobee.
I had a cutter in one hand and the vacuum cleaner in the other hand.
Pete's been Flobeeing himself for years.
Yeah.
There's so many good uses for a vacuum cleaner.
Ridiculous.
Oh, this could be good stuff for the bloopers at the end.
And I'm having really shoddy internet. I'm giving you guys a heads up. I don't know what's going on.
His internet has sucked since July, so it doesn't matter.
It's not good.
Barely staying alive right now.
This Dead Air has been sponsored by Jamie Carney's AT&T Wi-Fi.